Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to a very special podcast. This is one of our preview podcasts we do every now and again before a big TV show, usually Star Wars or Marvel related, drops, usually on Disney Plus, not always, but usually on Disney Plus. And that is happening right now, folks, because tomorrow, Wednesday, June 5th, may June the 5th be with you, because The Acolyte is dropping. Oh yes, indeed, a brand new Star Wars TV show featuring characters none of us are familiar with, set a long, long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It's all very, 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 very exciting indeed. And we have a bunch of interviews with the show's creator and showrunner, Leslie Headland, and also her incredible cast, including the likes of Amanda Stenberg and Daphne Keane. That'll be coming up very, very soon. But right now, I wanted to get Empire's top acolyte, Ben Travis, the man who did those interviews that you're about to hear, but also who wrote Empire's cover feature on this show a couple of months ago. I wanted to get him in and pick his brains and set you all up for what The Acolyte is going to be. Welcome, Ben. Hello.
Hello. My brain is here to be picked. Please, please pick away.
I'm going
to
pick your brains. All right. So, Ben, pretend for a second. Speak to me as you would a small child or a golden retriever and tell me and the folks at home what The Acolyte is.
So, a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far
away.
I've
heard this before.
Is four dots, not three.
Oh.
Yeah, this is, as you said, this is a longer time ago in a galaxy far, far away. This is a new Star Wars series exploring a whole early era of the galaxy that we've never seen on screen before. This show is set 100 years before The Phantom Menace.
What?
And it's at the tail end of a Star Wars era called The High Republic, which has been relatively recently established. I think really over the last like 3 or 4 years, Lucasfilm launched this whole publishing initiative. They were like, we're going to carve out a whole different era of the Star Wars galaxy, the High Republic. This is the Republic at its height, at its peak, Jedi everywhere, generally a peaceful time. And we're going to explore like what is happening in the galaxy at that time in novels, in comic books, in like YA novels.
There's YA?
It ranges in all kinds of ages. So they've established the High Republic in all of these different books and kind of on the page, basically. And this is the first live action show to be set roughly around the High Republic. Now we know, because of the Phantom Menace and everything that happens, ultimately the Republic is going to fall apart. Palpatine's going to rise. It's all going to go to shit.
Twice.
Massive spoilers.
He's going to rise twice.
Yeah, exactly. No one saw it coming the first time or the second time. And so like a part of this show is, you know, it's giving you all these new specific characters. Leslie Headland spoke in the cover feature about how the wars here, the Star Wars here, there isn't a big galactic war really, but it's a smaller war between individuals, between people. And at the same time, ultimately where this is all heading is setting up the stage that by the time The Phantom Menace comes around, Palpatine has been able to meddle in the background and there is secret Sith activity happening. So I have only seen 2 episodes of The Acolyte so far. I've only seen what we were shown at the premiere the other week and what people are going to be able to watch this week. 2 episodes are dropping at once. But we just know within a Star Wars context that this is going to involve in some way early rumblings of the rise of the Sith in a time where there's tons of Jedi and they don't really see it coming. And so, yeah, I think that's a fascinating era to set a Star Wars story in, and just really cool to like take a step away from all of the Skywalker saga stuff and just tell an entire new story that doesn't, you know, it's Star Wars, it's going to lead into other things, but it doesn't have to connect to a bunch of stuff that you may or may not have seen in the past.
Okay, so pretty new ground that we're breaking here. And who's breaking this ground?
So Leslie Headland is the creator, the showrunner. She directed the first 2 episodes as well. And she was the creator of Russian Doll, the brilliant Time Loop series on Netflix with Natasha Lyonne. And so she was, I think, much more heavily involved in season one of Russian Doll. She still was a producer on season two, but by that point she was kind of neck deep in Acolyte. She shot her shot. She shot first at Lucasfilm and was like, this is what I do with Star Wars. We talk about that a little bit in the interview. And yeah, generally otherwise, she comes from like an indie background. She had a fairly indie rom-com called Sleeping With Other People. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a really different mode to see Leslie Headland working in. At the same time, she is a huge, deep Star Wars nerd. Like, you may not necessarily see it reflected in loads of her other work, but she is a long, long, long time Star Wars fan, was into all of the expanded universe, legends, canon, all those novels that now aren't really canon anymore in the Disney Star Wars era. And she worships at the altar of George Lucas.
Who doesn't?
And, I mean, that's why we're all here, mm-hmm. right? And so she knows this stuff. She loves this stuff. She took the word, the phrase, acolyte, from that expanded universe lore. She cited all sorts of things when we were doing the interviews for the cover feature of specific Clone Wars episodes that she loves. And the Tales of the Bounty Hunter anthology novels that showed that you could just tell Star Wars stories that weren't about Luke or the Skywalkers or mm-hmm. anything about that. So she's a deep nerd, and this is the Star Wars story that she thought no one else was going to tell, and that she just had this idea for a story, and she pitched it to Lucasfilm around when Rise of Skywalker was coming out in 2019, when it was like, okay, episode 9 is coming out. This is sort of the end of an era of Star Wars. What is Star Wars in a post episode 9 world? And so she had the idea for this story, and particularly the setting, that she wanted to take a step away from the Skywalker stuff. And she was like, the way you do that is by going backwards in time. And she wanted to tell a story about the dark side of the Force that kind of leads effectively on a character wrestling with the dark side, or being a part of the dark side, and how all of Star Wars, one of the big connective tissues of Star Wars, is that we see our characters, our heroes, effectively are in a David versus Goliath situation. In the Skywalker saga films, generally that is our, you know, rebel or resistance heroes are fighting against this dominant force of the Empire or the First Order. And that actually, when you go back to this era of the timeline, the Jedi are, you know, the dominant force in the galaxy. Mm. They are the institution. And so you reverse that dynamic. You kind of focus on a character who is not part of the Jedi, who is not part of the light side of the Force, facing off against a whole bunch of Jedi, which is a fascinating place to start.
And who is that character?
So that character seems to be Amandla Stenberg's Mei, who is an assassin who you'll meet right at the beginning of the show. And has plenty of tricks up her sleeves. She has plenty of knives up her
sleeves. How many sleeves does she have?
Just two, but they are capacious. Ludicrously capacious sleeves.
Capacious sleeves is my favorite Star Wars character, by the way.
Salacious Crumb's brother. So yeah, Mei is, you know, the kind of face of the show in a big way. But this is a mystery show as well. This is the other thing that's fascinating. We know from the trailers, Jedi are being murdered. Jedi are being killed.
Murder, murder, murder.
And so it's sort of a detective story as well. It's like a mystery story. Who is killing the Jedi? Why are Jedi being killed? And we have a whole bunch of Jedi characters who are effectively investigating into
all that. All right, so I haven't seen any of these episodes yet. I'm going to go into it cold. I have been supplied the episodes, but I've chosen to watch it as it streams on Disney Plus. So, you know, I know sometimes people in these preview shows they go, "Oh, you're revealing too much. You've given far too much away." But trust me, folks, I know nothing about this show. So, who's investigating the murder of the Jedi? The murders of the Jedi?
leading the way on that front is Jedi Master Sol, who is Lee Jung Jae's character. Mm-hmm. So Lee Jung Jae from Squid Game, this is his first kind of major Western role. And so he's playing a really well-regarded Jedi Master, fancy gold robes. I love the High Republic robes. We're going to talk about these on the spoiler specials, but the look of this is different because it's this different era of Star
Pristine.
Wars. It's pristine, it's lavish, like the Jedi robes and the way the Jedi carry themselves is reflective of the fact that they are the sort of dominant and peaceful force in the galaxy. They haven't been corrupted by the Clone Wars. They haven't been drawn into all of the political bullshit that you know causes the fall of the Jedi Order. So you're seeing the like platonic ideal of who the Jedi could and should be. Master Sol kind of embodies that. At the same time, he has a connection to this whole situation that makes it a more personal thing for him. And yeah, there's a bunch of other Jedi because they're all in the mix together. So his Padawan is Jeki, played by Daphne Keane, who she is a half-human, half-Thelin Jedi. And the Thelin, if you think of the pink lady with the kind of mohawk in Jabba's palace in Return of the Jedi, that's a Thelin. So you're going to get loads of aliens and stuff in this as well. If you think of Andor as being like a very human-centric Star Wars story, this is a lot of Star Wars creatures and puppets. And there's a Wookiee Jedi called Kel Naka who has been doing all the press rounds.
In the original,
he's amazing.
Wookiees.
They had they had him on stage the other day, and actually at the junket, it was amazing. At the junket, between interviews, I've gone in, I've spoken to Lee Jung Jae, I'm waiting around to speak to Amandla and Leslie. I look down the corridor, and there is literally a Wookiee walking down the corridor, having to duck his head under the doorways because he's simply. That
reminds me of the time I was on the Galactic Star Cruiser. And no, I'm not going to be doing a 4-hour YouTube video about it. I was in the bowels of the ship on a mission once, and I turned around and Chewbacca was standing behind me. And if you know anything about me, you'll know that Chewbacca is my favorite Star Wars character. And I just didn't know what to do. I was like, it was like I'd suddenly been confronted with Jürgen Klopp, and I just froze. I just froze, but I gave him a hug. I gave him a hug and thanked him for his efforts.
I love the Chris Hewitt Hall of Fame. It's like Chewbacca, Jürgen Klopp, and Galactus are the big three.
I like tall, imposing figures of authority. Clearly, this is I need to see a therapist about this sort of stuff. But yeah, I know what it's like to see a Wookiee. A close quarters. It's really, really is quite something. And this Wookiee is also played by the same guy who plays Chewie in the Star Wars films, isn't that correct? You know, obviously not Peter Mayhew, but Peter Mayhew's passed on. Yeah. But Jonas Suwatomo, I believe is his name.
Jonas Suwatomo. So he obviously has played Chewie since The Force Awakens. He shared the role on Force Awakens, I think, with Peter Mayhew. But the thing that Leslie Headland said specifically was like, I saw his performance in Solo, and seeing a slightly different, you know, style of Chewie performance, or that younger Chewie. And I was like, I want to see this guy do more different Wookiee stuff. So, yeah, Jonas Suwatomo got the call that he's always dreamed of like, you're doing more Star Wars, you're still playing with Wookiee, but you're going to get a lightsaber this time, which is pretty cool.
That's dangerous with a Wookiee, isn't it?
Yeah, again, that's part of the question that came up, obviously, in the interviews, but that is going to be raised in the show, I think, of like how does a Jedi Wookiee work. There is a Jedi Wookiee in the High Republic novels. There's a Wookiee Padawan called Buriaga, who is a lovely, lovely character, and he is extraordinarily empathetic. That's one of his kind of main Jedi traits, is that he's really empathetic Jedi, but he can communicate with people, but not everyone understands him because he speaks Shiriwook. He's a great character. So I think this is a little bit of a nod to that, and to the fact that in the Clone Wars, there was like a little Jedi youngling who was also a Wookiee, but we've never seen that in live action before. I think this is part of the aim of this show, is to like dial into the aliens, dial into things that you haven't seen in Star Wars before, bring new things to the screen, give a different perspective on the Jedi and the Force and the rise of the Sith. And we have some, you know, all kinds of characters to get into that. We have Carrie Ann Moss is in this as Jedi Master Indara, who is basically Trinity with a lightsaber. That was part of the plan of, like, we need you to see this character and be like, hey, that's Trinity with a lightsaber. You would not mess with her. Charlie Barnett, who was in Russian Doll. If you've seen Russian Doll, he's the other sort of main character in Russian Doll who Natasha Lyonne's character comes into contact with in surprising ways. He's a big part of that show. He is a Jedi Knight called Yord. Yord Fandar. And he is very, like, buttoned up and loves the rules and plays by the rule book. But he's also, like, not the most confident out in the field. He has a lot of interplay with Jeki, with Daphne Keane's character, who she's only a Padawan, but she's kind of confident and she's got her shit together and she knows what she's doing. Whereas Yord is a bit older. He's a Jedi Knight, but he, you know, as much as he loves the rules, he isn't the best out in the field.
All right.
There are tons of characters here, plenty of people to kind of get your head around, but you'll meet the majority of them in these first couple of episodes. Also, Kymir. Should mention Kymir, Manny Jacinto's character. Manny Jacinto from The Good Place, Jason Mendoza, if you've seen that show. And he's not a Jedi. He is a bit of a rogue character in the mix who loves a delicious libation. And I won't say how he comes into the show because they didn't tell me that in the interviews, but you're going to meet him in episode 2.
Oh, spoiler alert. Okay. All very, very exciting. All right, should we get into some of these interviews?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so I think we should go with Amandla and Leslie first. So you have the star of the show and the creator of the show. What can you tell us about what they said, Ben? Obviously, people are going to hear it, but let's set it up for the folks at home.
This was a great chat with them. We talked about Leslie pitching the show, and specifically Leslie pitching the show to Amandla, which is a great story. And we just got into some good, deep, nerdy Star Wars chat. We didn't get into really any plot specifics in these interviews, just bringing good Star Wars vibes, and these two bring that in spades. The other thing to say is, when Amandla talks about getting a video message from Hayden Christensen, the footage of that has just been released online. So you can look that up and see her absolutely losing her mind as she gets a special message from her Star Wars hero.
And Amandla, I remember interviewing her at Celebration last year, and she was dressed as Padme from Attack of the Clones.
She was dressed as Padme, yes. That's the thing. Everybody involved in this show is going to come up a lot in these interviews. Leslie, huge Star Wars nerd. Amandla, huge Star Wars nerd. Charlie Barnett, huge Star Wars nerd, loves the Bad Batch more than anything in the world. Daphne Keane, massive Star Wars nerd. Manny Jacinto, also a huge Star Wars nerd. Lee Jung-jae, moderate Star Wars nerd, but very cool guy.
Yeah, all right. Exciting stuff. So here we go. The first interview you're about to hear is Amandla Stenberg and Leslie Headland talking about The Acolyte. Do please enjoy.
So I'm thrilled to welcome to the Empire podcast Leslie Headland, creator of The Acolyte, and Amandla Stenberg, one of the stars of the show. How are you guys doing?
Hey.
We're doing good. Last night was the premiere. So,
yes. Yeah. I was there. It was a great event.
So fun. Oh, gosh. That
it
red carpet.
So much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite part was when there were some Star Wars fans on the side who were all dressed in High Republic gear. And every time I walked by, I would go, for light and life. And everyone would go, for light and life. And you just said,
we are all the Republic. And I love any kind of event, any kind of premiere where you've got the creator of the show, you've got the cast, you got a Wookiee walking around. You've got Kel Naka.
Yes. Yeah.
You got to have a Wookiee. Are you guys excited to finally talk about this? We're not doing spoilers today, but you have both had to hold so many secrets for such a long time. Are you excited for the show to finally be making its way into the world, to be able to start talking in slightly less cryptic terms about The Acolyte?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm also just excited for it to not exist in the vacuum of our minds.
Yes.
And for the people who it's made for to experience it and to see how they interact with it.
Mm. Yeah. Leslie, I guess to take it back to the beginning, you pitched this show in 2019. And I think one of the fascinating things about this show is that this is your story that you've brought to Lucasfilm. How does that pitch come about? Are they looking for projects, or are you just like,
do you know what? I've got this story. I'm going to shoot my shot. I'm sending that message to Lucasfilm. How does it all come about for you?
It was a bit of the latter.
Right.
I had this show, Russian Doll. It was immediately because of the binge of Netflix, we kind of knew immediately that it was a very successful show. And I had this opportunity where I felt like, how can I capitalize on this moment that I'm having? Mm-hmm. And I said to my agents, I said, I want a general meeting with Lucasfilm. And I met Rain Roberts. Mm-hmm. She graciously agreed to meet with me. And she said, you know, if you had the money, if, you know, what kind of Star Wars would you make? And I said, I would make a show about the Sith. And I would set it before the prequels, when they're the underdog and the Jedi are the institution. So that was sort of how it started.
Yeah. And I'm going to come to Amandla's casting in the show in a minute. But before I do that, tell us about May and how she comes into this story and drives this story in a big way.
Yeah. May I find to be a really fascinating force user. And I don't want to say anything too explicit about that. But I think the archetype of the character, I always thought from the moment that I read it, was such a great addition to the Star Wars universe, you know, this femme fatale assassin. And that to me is so Sith also. But she has such a deep backstory that is revealed throughout the episodes. And that complexity I've always found really engaging. Her character design is inspired by so many genres and references. I think she's really reflective of what the show is, which is, to me, kind of an homage to the genres and influences that George Lucas pulled from when in 1977, you know. It's a continuation of the legacy of film, which is so deeply influenced by samurai films and westerns. And as a person who loves film, I think that the fact that he took those references and he contributed to the dialogue by making Star Wars and making it fantastical and filling it with messages for young people and old people about power, I just thought was incredible. Now I'm just ranting about what I like about Star Wars.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, to get back to the pitching side
of things.
I
love hearing you talk about Star Wars. It's one of the favorite things.
Getting to talk about Star Wars and getting in this dialogue about Star Wars is one of the best things. Yeah. I mean, so Leslie, you pitched the show to Lucasfilm. And you're like, here's what I'm going to do. If you gave me a Star War, here's what I'd do. Amandla told me.
A singular Star War.
Here's some money. Go make a Star War. Amandla,
Arrested Development. Yeah.
You told me for the Empire cover feature that you get the call and you're like, I'm going for this meeting with Lucasfilm. I'm going for brunch. You sit down with Leslie and with Rain Roberts. They open an iPad. And here is loads of art of you as a character in Star Wars. And you did not know that was going to happen. Leslie, I'd like to know your side of that anecdote. Is there a part of you in that moment that's like, I hope she likes this. I hope this this goes
so
down
nervous.
Well. What's your side of that?
I was terrified. I was like, you know, so she came up very, very early on. I would say that the role demanded heavy lifting, you know, and it felt to me that you needed not just an incredible actor, but a partner in crime, you know?
And so were you like, the best way we do that is instead of just talking about why don't we just show Amandla what we
do? Yes, no, I mean, my sister Inga and I, we do visual presentations. Like we did one for Kathleen.
Right.
Once we were in prep, we did them for each character because we weren't allowed to give scripts out. Mm. So what we would really do is we would say, we've designed this character for you. Mm. You're our only choice.
Save me, Amandla Stenberg.
No.
You're my only hope.
If you say,
nice.
If you say, oh, you were my only hope. If you say, yeah. If you say no, I have no other ideas. Mm. I know I say that, but it's absolutely true. And so I was so nervous. I didn't know. I didn't realize you were a fan of Star Wars either. I thought you were going to be like, these people are crazy. you know. But we had designed it. You know, we spent all this time designing it for you. I mean, we spent like at least, you know, I would say 3 weeks making that. I mean, it wasn't even that long, but it was just like we wanted to hit you with it and make sure you knew.
Blows my mind. It's too makes me emotional.
Also, I think with The Hate U Give, it was, I've said this before, but you were acting not just, you were present not just in the scenes and in the performance, but there's a larger cultural conversation that felt like the performance was honoring that, acknowledging that. And Star Wars is like, it's such a huge thing that culturally there's a responsibility within the performance that I felt you were the only person that could take on. We talked to you about you a lot in the writer's room. I this was a long way of answering. But the point was is that I was really scared.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about the cultural conversation of Star Wars, also the literal conversation of Star Wars. You're both hugely into this. Leslie, your knowledge is so deep. Amanda, you were at Star Wars Celebration dressed as Padme for kicks in London last year. That was incredible. How often while you're making this show do you just get sidetracked about just talking about Star Wars stuff? Coming from an office, the Empire office, we devolve into Star Wars conversations on like an hourly basis.
Oh, yeah. All of the time. I mean, that was why pre-production was so great, because we could just do that for fun and it was our job. Like, I remember using the whiteboard a lot, and I would throw out my conspiracy theories at Leslie, and I would make like my own timelines. Remember I had the conspiracy theory about force balance, and I would write out like, yeah, we had a really good time.
What's your theory?
What's my theory? Well, it's kind of a controversial theory.
Right, okay.
Well, so I took a look at the whole Star Wars timeline, and I mapped out kind of like a visual representation of when the Force moves from the light side to the dark side. And I found that in it, there was a pattern. And I didn't really know if this was like a conscious choice made, but at the same time, it couldn't be because so many different people have contributed to Star Wars. I think it's just kind of a subconscious collective experience that happens when people make a universe together. And I've found in that the light and the dark always balance each other out, which is not a novel concept in any way, shape, or form, but there's a lot of a conversation around what does the balance of the Force mean? Does it mean returning to the light? And I think George has alluded to that at other moments, but then in other times he's said that is the interplay of the two. And I really kind of saw visually the interplay of the two.
Yeah.
I also just want to add to that in a show about the bad guys, in a show about the Sith, if you think about it, you know, at the end of the High Republic, it's very unbalanced. Mm-hmm. You know, the Jedi are such a huge institution at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all Force sensitive. They're all learning and training together. And there's two bad guys.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the balance of that is, it's so out of whack.
Oh, yeah.
So it just feels like the Force would start, you know what I mean? It would start gravitating toward the Sith because of that.
Well, I guess I see George referencing the balance of the Force being returning to the light when I think about it in the context of the Galactic Empire.
Yes, yes, yes.
But when you go back and you think about the Force in the context of a different institution in power, I think it changes. And I think that really is just such a... I think Star Wars is imbued with these spiritual concepts, both that George put into it, but then naturally arise out of humanity, out of the place that people connect to it spiritually. And I truly believe that they channel the Force, both fans who contribute to the universe and are working hard on those Wikipedia articles, but also all of the creators. I think that film to me is the most magical when it becomes a portal into our authentic selves and spirits. And I do think that in certain universes, and I feel this way about the Star Wars universe, it's just like a way for us to create a collective space to do this magic where we allow truth of our existential truth to come through.
Yeah. That's something I wanted to pick up on, because the show is in a part about the fallibility of the Jedi. That's kind of what this era taps into. And something you mentioned, Leslie, when we spoke for the cover feature, was that your favorite Clone Wars episode is The Wrong Jedi.
That's, yes.
Ahsoka leaving the Jedi Order, yeah. having been feeling betrayed by how they've dealt with that whole situation. Amandla, I know you're a massive Clone Wars fan as well. Mm-hmm. Did you guys discuss that episode in the background while making this show and talking about what that means for the Jedi Order?
I don't think so.
I don't think we actually talked about it.
It was much more of a writer's room conversation. Mm. Because when I watched that episode for the first time, I was just shocked that was the decision that she made. And honestly, I didn't know you were allowed to leave. Like, I just kind of thought, you know, this is a trained, Force-sensitive woman who feels betrayed by her order. Mm-hmm. And honestly, because she was trained as a youngling, her family, mm-hmm. you know, and she just leaves because of injustice. Mm-hmm. And so it made me start thinking about what would happen to a person and to a Force-sensitive person if they left the order.
Yeah.
And what kind of fate they would face.
That's so cool. I didn't know that.
Our time is very nearly up, but just to finish out on, Amandla, you mentioned that for the cover feature that you met Dave Filoni at Star Wars Celebration and you basically screamed at him, you created the Clone Wars. Leslie, I it must be hard to pick one, but what has been your like big Star Wars wish fulfillment moment in all of this? Have you met George while making this show?
Oh, no. I mean, that would be bad because it would be, I would freak out, you know. I would, you know, there are a couple artists that I've just met and totally freaked out on, and it would be really embarrassing to do that to George Lucas. So I think it was a blessing in disguise, for sure.
I had something embarrassing happen the other day, another wish fulfillment.
Right.
Where Disney did something diabolical.
Okay.
They put me in front of a camera, and then they said, hey, here's an iPad with a surprise on it, and I grabbed it. And it was Hayden Christensen.
Oh, you had your Hayden moment.
I didn't know about this.
And I said, no. I could not press play. And then finally I gained the courage and I pressed play. And he said, hey, Amandla, it's Hayden. At which point I paused it and I ran it back. And I kept playing, hey, Amandla, it's Hayden, over and over again. Before I watched the whole video. And my whole reaction was filmed, which is going to be very incriminating and embarrassing. But I have that video on my phone now, and I'm just watching it throughout the day when I need it. Yeah.
That's amazing. Between that and getting to play music that John Williams adapted for you himself, this is another level of Star Wars wish fulfillment.
I think for me, the wish fulfillment was at the end when the wipe is a circle, and it just the end kind of goes, and then whenever we had worked on the edit, it always said like insert name. Mm-hmm. And so when it happened at the LA premiere and that beautiful wipe happened and it said written by Leslie Edlund, I you know, in the blue font over the stars, I actually squealed. Yeah. And then I said, that's my name. Like I had forgot, like it looked like, I was like, is that how you spell my name?
Right.
Like, that was wild to me. Yeah, that was absolutely the wish fulfillment for me.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on the show, and I can't wait to see the rest of it.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Amandla Stenberg and Leslie Headland. Your choice, Ben. Who do you want next?
I think let's go Lee Chung-jae.
Lee Chung-jae. Okay.
Put some respect on Master Sol's name.
We should also say that Lee Chung-jae doesn't speak a lot of English. And so, therefore, he had an interpreter with him. And so, what you're going to hear is the interpreter rather than Lee Chung-jae necessarily. But still, good time was had by all, Ben.
Good time was had by all. He is very Master Sol-like in person. And we talked obviously a lot about Star Wars, a bit about screen detectives, about wearing those multi-layered Jedi robes. Yeah, tons of goodness.
Tons of goodness. Here we go. Lee Jung Jae, do please enjoy.
It's a pleasure to welcome to the Empire podcast, Lee Jung Jae, one of the stars of The Acolyte. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm great. Thank you.
We're here in London. The premiere was last night in Leicester Square. How was the premiere for you?
특히 런던에서 프리미어를 가지고.
It's especially meaningful to have a premiere here in London. We shot for 10 months in the UK. And so because of that, a lot of the cast and crew we worked with were able to come to the premiere last night. And we got so close while we were shooting. And so it was a really moving moment to be able to see everyone again, share conversations, share memories, and spend some time together.
And this show has been a long time coming for you. It was a long shoot. We've known about this show for a couple of years now, and it's all been very secretive. So how excited are you for people to finally discover Master Sol, your Jedi Master, in this show? And how would you describe him as a character?
스타워즈의 이야기들이 굉장히
There are so many Star Wars stories that have developed from the movies in the 70s, and seeing these stories develop in diverse ways has been so interesting. The Acolyte in particular is very unique because of its genre, which is of the mystery thriller. And I think this is such a fresh take on a Star Wars story and an aspect that I think the audience will find very interesting. It's, of course, also filled with action, suspense, and tension. Within that, my character, Master Sol, is at the center of an investigation over mysterious events that happen within the world. And so it was very fun to be able to express him as an actor. While Master Sol is brave as a Jedi Master, he also has a very human element to him. And it was very important for me to be able to express this character with depth.
It's a fantastic character, and as you say, a detective character in a way. Who's your favorite screen detective?
영화 속에서 수사 반장이요? 와, 너무 많은데. 아, 개인적으로 뭐 진 해크만의 그 French Connection.
There's so many great characters of investigators. For example, Gene Hackman in The French Connection. There's Dirty Harry. There's Mel Gibson, Ed Harris, and True Detective. So I can just rattle off so many very fun detective characters.
And Leslie Headland cast you in the show after seeing you in Squid Game. She said, I'm writing The Acolyte. I'm watching Squid Game. I see Lee Jung Jae and he's Master Sol. First up, what was it like for you being in Squid Game and seeing how much that became a huge show? And then in the wake of Squid Game, you get the call and it's the call for Star Wars.
사실 Star Wars 때문에 전화를...
I could have never expected a call to be offered a role in Star Wars, so I was very surprised. And when I heard, I was very curious who would be directing The Acolyte. And when I heard it was going to be Leslie, I was really curious because I had seen her previous work directing Russian Doll, so it piqued my curiosity even more what kind of Star Wars she would direct. And I knew that she would have a very unique take on a Star Wars franchise. So I thought it was a really fresh take for Lucasfilms to select Leslie as a director. And it made me even more curious and happy that she would be directing it.
We have to talk about Master Sol's outfit, his getup. I love the High Republic robes, the yellows, the golds. A lot of layers going on. Talk me through the costume. How many different pieces are you putting on? What is that process? Did you like the robes? Was it a lot to wear them? Tell me about that.
Jedi costume이 동양.
So the Jedi costume, it has some influence and similarities to garments from Asia. So it has a lot of layers. So there's 4 layers in total and no button closures. Rather, you wear the garment using ties and knots. So because we were shooting during winter, it kept me very warm. So I was very happy about that.
When we spoke for the Empire feature, you mentioned that you rewatched a lot of Star Wars films after getting this role, looking closely at all the Jedi in particular. Did you have a favorite Star Wars film when you did your rewatch?
Those first movies left such a lasting impact on me, I would still say that my favorite film within the Star Wars franchise is Empire Strikes Back. And also my favorite character is Qui-Gon Jinn. And I got a lot of inspiration from this character when developing Master Soul.
There's a lot of stillness in Master Soul. And I think there's a lot of stillness in Qui-Gon Jinn as well. Our time is very nearly up, but just to finish, what's been your favorite part of this whole Star Wars experience, whether that's something on set, a premiere, Star Wars celebration, the event? What's been the best thing about being part of Star Wars?
저에게는 다
This whole process has been a new experience for me. So from shooting The Acolyte to promoting it, each part has been very meaningful. Even when I participated in Star Wars Day, meeting the fans is realizing that not only is Star Wars part of a very long film history, but also the fandom has a long history as well. So it was a very joyful moment getting to meet the fans and getting to experience that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on the show. Thank you, Lee Jung-jae.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Lee Jung-jae, Master Sol himself, and that leaves, Ben. Who does it leave?
A trio, a gloriously chaotic trio. Manny Jacinto, Charlie Barnett, and Daphne Keane. This one was a lot of fun. It was 4 of us in the room. There's quite a lot of crosstalk, but the energy was high. They were in really good spirits. Again, plenty of nerdy Star Wars chat and some great stories about them all meeting their Star Wars heroes, including Daphne Keane at the Empire Awards, and a really great story from Charlie Barnett about his stay at... Well, I won't spoil it. Listen out for his Star Wars hero. It's amazing.
All right, here we go. Charlie Barnett, Manny Jacinto, and Daphne Keane. Do please enjoy.
A delight to be joined on the Empire podcast by 3 of the stars of The Acolytes, Manny Jacinto, Charlie Barnett, Daphne Keane. How are you all?
Good.
I'm very well. How are you guys feeling after the premiere last night? I was there. It was a great event. Are there sore heads today? Where are you guys at?
We're good. I'm a bit knackered, but good.
Yeah. I love that word.
Knackered, that's a great word. Yeah.
I mean, this is my 4th time seeing it too. Mm. So it's the first occasion I was extremely proud. And you never know when there's so many cooks in the kitchens, you never know what's going to end up being, you know.
Mm.
I had full trust in Leslie, but it was nice to sit back and be redeemed, or I guess be validated, yeah, in that trust, in that belief. So really proud. But now by the 4th one, I have notes for myself, of course.
By the 4th
one. By the 4th one, I'm like, oh, you know what, actually,
Fourth try.
Yeah, that's when it starts. The first time you were like, oh my God, why did you make that choice, bro?
Let's not watch it a 5th then. 5th time Charlie's going to leave the premiere in Madrid and he's going to be like, this is terrible.
It's only on me. Everything else is brilliant. It's just, Charlie, come on, bro.
Well, I'm curious.
You don't want to go into it. You know?
Okay. We'll talk about this later.
That feels very yawed of you. I mean, so we're introducing people to a whole new realm of Star Wars. Briefly, what can you tell us about Chimere and Yord and Jeki?
Chimere, I always start as him being a former smuggler. He's basically the representation of a civilian in this world, like how a civilian navigates these dominant powers and how he can kind of weasel his way around and strategize around these powers that are kind of pulling him back and forth, and he finds himself reluctantly in this adventure with May to try and appease this master or her master so that they kind of get out of there alive.
I'm always interested in the former smuggler part of it too. I'm like, yes. I want to know Kamiya's like old life.
Also, what I love about something, a little detail that I noticed yesterday for the first time, which is really bad of me, was a little name drop that Kamiya does when he's like, I used to smuggle for the huts.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wait, what?
Wow. Yes. Yeah, what's so that? Cute. I want to know that spin off.
Yeah. Let's get the prequel to the prequel.
Disney Plus.
Put it out there.
Kind of a Star Wars story.
Yes.
I left
really
the smuggling
good,
behind.
Yeah.
Smuggle no more. No.
Smuggle no more.
No, I think we leave
I'm not a writer.
The slogan
we
writers.
Got that, yeah.
You can act.
Well, Yord Fandar. I play Yord Fandar. He is a Jedi Knight, a fairly recent Jedi Knight. It's been 2 years.
Mm. A rookie, some might say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's still feeling his oats and trying to find his positioning, how he, you know, represents himself as a Jedi, but he cares passionately about the Jedi Order, about the governing of the Republic, and seeing the galaxy in a place of peace. I think he's committed, maybe to a fault, to this trajectory and to his binding. To, you know what I mean? It makes every part of himself feel needed.
Well, I play Jackie Lon. And she's a young Padawan to Master Sol, who is played by the incomparable Lee Jung-jae. And she's wildly talented and wise and intelligent and just sometimes a little bit overly confident, which leads to hopefully comedic relief.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, having spoken to you all for the Empire cover feature, I know you are all huge Star Wars nerds.
Yes.
Daphne, you made me feel older than anybody's ever made me feel when I asked you about when you first saw Star Wars and you were like, do you remember video shops? Do you remember getting DVDs? I was like, I very much remember that. And so you watched all the original trilogy as a kid. Charlie, you gave me such a detailed rundown on why Ahsoka is an incredible character. It was like a five-minute Ahsoka monologue.
Any chance he gets.
Yeah, Manny, you described Yoda as the GOAT, which is one of the best things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Out of the three of you, who's the biggest Star Wars geek of all three of you?
Leslie.
Okay, but she's not in the room with us. Charlie's always, not Charlie.
Yeah, it's almost like dangerous territory in my mind to say that you're a huge Star Wars fan, because like, you better come with the receipts, my man. I'm like a soft, even knowing I feel being proud of what I do know about it. And my beautiful and wonderful husband is a huge fan. And so I utilized him as a dramaturg often. I feel like I should be thanking him more, but
yeah, you should shout her out more.
Yeah. But I'm going to claim myself.
Yep. And anybody else contesting
okay,
that?
Daphne
looks horrified.
Yes, I know. Daphne's in the shirt. Daphne does, like, anytime you want to quote lines to, Daphne's got it down. I won't lie.
Maybe I'm a little bit more humble.
Wow.
Keeping it low key.
Am I pulling a Jackie right now?
You're pulling a Yord.
Overconfident.
No. Yord is not overconfident. Competent.
Yes, he is. Maybe. Be serious.
He believes in himself.
Okay, I think we're different kinds of fans. I think.
Okay.
I think I know more from just like watching it and enjoying it. Charlie was so, well, we all did a bunch of research, but Charlie became so obsessive about his research.
I just loved it.
That I think that's now you like factually, well, like that's the kind of knowledge that you have.
I don't know if y'all had this experience, but I found it fascinating and really beautiful that there's this George Lucas well of information of canon. There is the Dave Filoni, there's this new like beast and like Clone Wars and the Bad Batch and all these things that are feeding into that. You got J.J. Abrams feeding into that. But then there's the fandom, and the fandom has built so much, not to mention George giving them the kind of availability to play around in this world and build their own pieces, the video games. There's just so much you can pull from. Yeah. And as an actor, that's the shit that brings me in. I love, love that.
Yeah.
And of course, part of that being the High Republic, which up until this point has only been explored in novels on the page, and let's not forget the Young Jedi Adventures cartoons for the little ones. But the Acolyte
little
is
ones
first.
And adults.
And adults.
Thank you.
All Star Wars can be for everybody.
Charlie's really into the whole animation side of Star Wars.
Bad Batch is the shit.
Yeah, you were very excited about
that. I cry almost every time. I told you this last time. Brilliant episodes. Great writing.
But the Acolyte is going to be the first live action High Republic sort of adjacent story that people will see. So as Star Wars fans, what was it like for you guys to get a first glimpse at this, to be part of bringing that era to life? Because you have different robes, you have different kinds of droids. Mm-hmm. The visual look of the world is very different, dialing back the clock 100 years before the Phantom Menace. So mm-hmm. what was it like as fans to be a part of bringing the High Republic to the screen?
Huge.
It was massive. I mean, I can't speak about wearing the robes, but I remember first seeing these guys in the robes. I was just like feeling out, touching everything. They had like a little flashlight, they had the gloves. It was just like, yeah, I was so in awe about what seeing these guys come out onto the screen for the first time.
Also, your first scene that we shot, we had a lightsaber in that scene.
Yeah, we did.
That was Charlie's saber.
Which I keep thinking about on being that first line of like, a Jedi only pulls it on unless, you know, if they're expecting
me. Yord keeps pulling out his
Yord
saber.
Is gung-ho.
He just wants to stun
ready.
People.
I want to show JJ. I want to show Soul.
Tell me if I'm wrong. My reading of that is that he's just... he's not ready to kill. He's just really excited by the saber.
He's excited.
Him,
by
he's
his
even
powers.
Lighting caves with it. It's like, be serious. This is not a flashlight. This is
remember
a
we
saber.
Talked about. He's Yord is not very adapt at using the Force, and so the saber is his safety. It's
like his.
I know how to do this. Right. I know how to do this.
But you also, sorry, this is a little detail. Charlie did a really funny line that then they cut from it.
We had a couple too.
With the saber.
Which line?
Charlie would pull out the saber and he'd go, unhand her. And then cut it. And I'm so sad they cut it.
Oh, was that not there?
No. I actually really got it. Didn't. I would say that. Yeah.
Release the unhand her.
It would have been on my notes.
Unhand her.
Yes. That's so Yord though.
It's so Yord.
Definitely.
I mean, in terms of like the geeking up, you guys went to Jedi school, right?
Yeah, we did.
Mm-hmm. Is the smuggler school? Did you go to?
Like, with the huts?
Yes, with the huts. No, I had to mainly do that on my own, to be honest. I wish there was a smuggler school. I really just put on these really dreary looking robes, and that was kind of my training. There was if you watch the second episode where I'm like making the drink, that was very difficult actually. Just like say the monologue, but also, all these like little pieces. I definitely had to rehearse that in itself was a dance.
That was very impressive actually.
Just a nod to the set, the scenic department, the set department, and our designers. Like the space that he's in for a lot of fans, if you want to find Easter eggs, I mean, Daphne and I took a day when we were getting ready to film that, walked around the whole room and there are pieces from every project.
See if you can spot the C-3PO head.
Okay, that's a good challenge. Challenge. And we mentioned in the previous interview, you've been to Galaxy's Edge, you've been to the bar in Galaxy's Edge, because Chimaer likes a drink. Have you guys been to Galaxy's Edge? Have you been to the bar? Has there been like an acolyte trip to the cantina?
Oh, we need to do that.
I'm trying to see if I can go on the 3rd before we premiere. I really want to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm trying to. So I don't know if you guys want to join.
I'll go with you.
Are you working?
I'm in Miami, but I can come.
We can go to Florida.
Actually, me and Amanda went to Disneyland recently, which was really fun. And we went through the whole like Star Wars ride. Yeah. And at one point we were in it, and it was a really lovely moment when we were together, and someone in the back went, "They're the girls from The Acolyte." And we were like, so cute.
So are you saying, Charlie, that you need to go before the show premieres because you're like, this is the last time I can probably go to Galaxy's Edge and keep a relatively low profile?
I don't think I get recognized that often, so I feel like I might be safe even afterwards, but I don't know. This is a whole new world for me, so we'll see. But
yeah, Star Wars.
I know. I was really trying to get into it while we still have the connection to Disney. I'm still working for them. So,
get everything,
you know, we haven't been picked up. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. So, you know.
They're like, hook me up, Disney. Yeah, that's me and Amanda went
shame,
hooked up.
Shameful.
No, sorry, sue me.
I want my Ahsoka doll. I'm sorry.
Right? Yeah. You got to get all the Ahsoka stuff.
Yeah.
And what was the best set for you guys to hang out on? Because this is all practical, physical sets. I mean, maybe there wasn't a huge amount of hangout time, but you got to have a bit of downtime between takes.
We chilled.
Yeah.
Where did you chill?
I really enjoyed the ship. The Poland was really fun. I mean, Kofa was beautiful, but it was not. It was freezing. Yeah, there were like
you
frogs.
Hated it after a while because you're like we're
but
in.
Also,
but also
something that I hated, which is a tiny little detail that was very annoying, was that there were branches everywhere, and I'm shorter than everyone, and JJ and Charlie are tall, and every time I'd have to walk behind them because I'm the Padawan, and these branches would just hit my face. So I was by like week one, I was like, okay, I'm done. This is actually I'd like make
the
up
the struggles of a Padawan.
It was so annoying. It was really annoying. So Kofa was like, oh. Oh, gorgeous. Do I want to shoot here? Probably not. It's freezing. There are frogs. There's pigeons flying around. Like, it was just very full on.
This is the reason I loved it.
Olega, I loved. Olega was insane. Yeah, in the apothecary shop.
Yeah, I loved walking through like what felt like a market, like those streets of Olega.
You could smell they were cooking food, there was incense burning, like it was easiest to walk into. Yeah.
Which was insane.
Yes. Yeah. It was like, yeah.
It was crazy. It was
getting
so
in a candy store, you could just explore that place for hours, for days. Yeah, all these like little specific details that you probably won't catch on screen, but yeah, but they made it happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so through the course of making this show and everything that comes with it, you were all at Star Wars Celebration. Mm-hmm. Have you met your Star Wars heroes through the making of the show? Have you met Ashley Eckstein or Rosario Dawson? Mm. Manny, have you met Frank Oz somehow? Daphne, have you met, I know you're a big Anakin fan.
Have you met
Hayden?
I have not met Hayden.
What's been your geekiest Star Wars
I saw Hayden from afar.
Rosario passed me in the hallway.
I met Rosario. Yeah. I had a whole chat with Rosario's mom.
I know, you told
mom.
Me about it and I was too afraid
Rosario's
to go
mom. Rosario's mom was lovely.
Yeah, Rosario's mom. Rosario's mom.
I was chatting to Rosario's mom for ages.
I remember that. She freaked out when she saw you.
Yeah, she was like, she moved everybody. And she was like, are you on the good place? Yes. Yeah, she's very cute. Rosario was very sweet as well. Yeah. And also, Daisy's here at this hotel.
Yes.
And she passed by. Yeah. And I was like, oh, God.
I met her years ago. I met her, actually. I met Daisy in 2018. The day I met Mark Hamill as well.
Oh, whoa.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
I met Mark Hamill at the Empire Awards and I was too terrified to go up to him and he came up to me and congratulated me for Logan and then I just basically cried and I have a very sweet picture with him.
Oh my God. Went to Carrie Fisher's house.
Okay, I'm best friends with Harrison Ford. You went to Carrie Fisher's house?
I did one of my, when I
with
went
Carrie
to-
With Carrie Fisher?
She was there. She shows Debbie Reynolds' house above. She was still alive. It was honestly like a magical, magical event. I had a friend that was staying.
Why wasn't that the first thing you said?
I kind of keep it close to my chest because it was like, it was right after she had done her one woman show too. She was like,
oh my God,
she was
just, so
she was a great space and it was one of the coolest experiences. Experiences I've ever had. I stupidly, my friend had asked if I wanted to stay at the house and I said no.
Why?
I don't know. I think I was nervous. I get freaked out when I see people that I really admire.
You didn't want to sleep on the same roof as Carrie Fisher?
I was scared. I think we would have been staying in a different house. They had a couple houses there. side note though, I met all of the Bad Batch creators the day before the final aired and I cried. I kind of freaked out. I did because they're so good. So good. Sorry.
Mm. And well, since the Bad Batch ended, it's great to have the Acolyte as new Star Wars to look forward to. Congratulations on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that was Daphne Keane, Manny Jacinto, and Charlie Barnett. Anyone else, Ben? Did you interview anyone else? You seem to have interviewed everybody.
Only for the magazine. No, okay. That's it for the podcast.
So this is exciting, isn't it? I mean, this is a. Star Wars on the small screen so far has been really, really interesting. It's been a bit of a mixed bag. There's absolute triumphs like Andor and, for the most part, The Mandalorian. And The Mandalorian has been such a joy and obviously is graduating, if you will, to the big screen with The Mandalorian and Grogu, which will be hitting, next year, 2025? I think that one's coming. Yeah, very, very exciting indeed. And then there have been shows that maybe haven't quite worked as well as we would have liked, like Obi-Wan Kenobi and certainly the Book of Boba Fett. But this one's interesting because all of those shows are so tied to the Skywalker saga. And this one definitely does seem to be plowing new ground.
Yeah, I mean, new Star Wars is always something to be excited about. This feels very, very new. I love that this is Leslie Headland's story. It's really rare that somebody comes in as just like, I have a story to tell in the world of Star Wars. Even Mando
brought Luke Skywalker in at a certain point and is connected to all of the animated stuff. This is its own thing. This is like a new original Star Wars story in an unexplored part of the galaxy. I think Leslie Headland's just a really interesting person and filmmaker. And I'm excited for this different look at the Jedi, to see the Jedi in a different stature, to see loads of Jedi as well. That's something we don't see that often, especially in live action Star Wars. It's a big deal in Attack of the Clones when all those Jedi come into the arena, because you've never seen that before and you've barely seen it since. So I'm excited to see that.
All right. But does that leave the door open for cameos? If we're 100 years before Phantom Menace, that certainly means Yoda will be knocking around in this timeline.
Yeah, he's around at this part of the timeline. I don't know if we're going to see him in this show or not, but that is possible.
And Chewbacca? Don't forget, Chewbacca is
Chewbacca old should
enough,
be yeah. alive. Mm-hmm. Although we met him in pretty dire circumstances in Solo, so mm-hmm. Who knows where he is? Maybe he's a little teenage Chewie running around. I should say teenage Chewie. That's a show. That's a show. I'm gonna shoot my shot to Lucasfilm right now. I should say there is a relatively prominent character in this show who is the only character so far from the High Republic novels being brought into live action. Rebecca Henderson plays Venestra Rowe, who in the books, in the High Republic books, which are generally set about 100 years before this show, so like 200 years before The Phantom Menace,
and she about plays 25,000 years after James Mangold's prequel.
We have an extensive timeline article on Empire Online. Come and read it. We'll break it all down for you. There's a character in the books called Venestra Rowe, who in those books is a 16-year-old Jedi Knight. She passed the Jedi trials incredibly early. She's very young. She's a prodigious young Jedi. And Miri Allen, kind of like Barriss Offee, if that means anything to you. Green skin, purple hair, lots of diamond tattoos on the face. So in the books, yeah, she's 16. She has a purple lightsaber, which she has also modified to become a light whip, which is something also that comes from like older Star Wars lore. But we've never seen that in live action before, so I am on tenterhooks to see if we get the light whip in this show. And we're going to find her 100 years later, played by Rebecca Henderson, who is an actor and also Leslie Headland's wife. She told me, you can tell I love Venestra Rowe because I cast my wife to play Venestra. So at this point, she is, a really seasoned Jedi master who has been around for a long time and seen a lot of Jedi come through the temple. And if you know Venestra from the books, it's pretty interesting to see where she's ended up and how the connective tissue to who we know from the books, and also how she's changed a lot through those years. I'm fascinated to see more of Venestra as the season goes on. And Leslie Headland also teased, I think they're hoping they might do more Acolyte. I don't think this is a one and done. I think if this goes well, there will be future seasons of the Acolyte. And she said maybe down the line, there could be more characters from the High Republic books who come into live action in the show. She's had a little chinwag with Pablo Hidalgo about that, the Lucasfilm lore overlord. But for now, Venestra, if you want to check out any of the books, she's primarily in the YA books.
YA?
So check out Into the Dark and Out of the Shadows. But she also kind of crosses over into the adult High Republic novels as well.
On that note, that is it for our preview of The Acolyte. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Hope you enjoyed us chatting about it. And of course, the show is going to be on Disney Plus as of tomorrow. As Ben said, the first two episodes drop at the same time. And then after that, it goes to a weekly rotation. So you're going to get a new episode every week. And as a result of that, you're also going to get a new Empire Spoiler Special reacting to each episode every single week. It's a mystery show. There seems to be a lot to discuss. So we're very, very excited to get into it. And there's 8 episodes in total. So this should run until mid-July. Thereabouts. So there you go. Very, very exciting indeed. A brand new slice of Star Wars. How exciting. Right, all that remains now is for me to say goodbye to Ben, my one colleague of such lethal cunning.
For light and life, this is what the Jedi say to each other in the High Republic era. For light and life.
For light and life, Ben. For light and life. And it's goodbye from me. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. May the Force be with you.
And also with you.
And also with you as well. Bye-bye.